Welcome into episode 14 of This Week in Bitcoin. My name is Chris, and I'm coming to you from the woods of the Pacific Northwest this week. I've been sitting out here, kind of keeping an eye on things, seeing what's going on in the world of Bitcoin news. And this week, I just have a mini update for you. There's just a couple of things I want to cover with you that I'm keeping an eye on. I want you to know about them. I don't think they're too concerning yet, but we need them on our radar. And it's our lead story this week that we'll start with. The Intelligence Authorization Act for fiscal 2025 is out. It is sponsored by Senator Mark Warner from Virginia. And in there, there's a little provision in the spending package for the intelligence apparatus. And it addresses cryptocurrencies and their use with terrorist activities. And it's just kind of been low-key slipped into this giant bill. The provision, which would force exchanges to identify Bitcoin users, also gives the President of the United States the ability to block any transaction, quote, between any person subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. As you can imagine, this has caused some concern among the quote-unquote crypto industry. They do have a pretty big lobbying apparatus now. And I took a look through the spending package. It's huge. As you might expect, anything that's trying to fund the intelligence apparatus, it's ginormous. There's even a section in there called, quote, unidentified anomalous phenomena, which is, you know, about UFOs. But the digital asset stuff, it isn't under, quote, emerging technologies or even the other matters section. No, no, of course, it is in the terrorism section. Subtitle C, International Terrorism, Section 423, Terrorist Finance Prevention. It doesn't really draw any attention to itself. What I'm getting at is this is a giant document with all kinds of stuff in there. And if you were to look at the table of contents and you look at what it covers, it doesn't talk about digital assets. It talks about terrorist finance prevention. And then if you go into terrorist financing prevention, you'll see where it has all of these definitions for digital assets, anything that's a distributed ledger. And they specifically call out for the president's ability to block transactions. Now, like I said in the intro, this is a concern. It's something we need to be aware of, especially because I think some people have their guard down because supposedly the tone has changed in Washington. I'm not seeing a lot of tone change right here, boys. What I'm seeing is them just being a little sneakier about it. Mark Warner's not a very good actor in this space to begin with. And it is good to see that the crypto lobbyists are seemingly on top of this one. I think that they're trying to hope. I think they are hoping and trying to avoid a repeat of the painful legislative surprise that they had in the infrastructure bill of 2021, if you'll recall. You might remember there was an 11th hour provision that was crazy with the crypto taxation. Like, I want to say it was something like even $20 crypto transactions would be taxed. You remember how that went down at the last minute? And it was crypto lobbying that saved us. And it was kind of that moment that shook the industry up and said, hey, if we're going to prevent this from happening again, we need to be on our game. So this is a bit of a mess. Again, it's the Intelligence Authorization Act for fiscal year 2025, sponsored by Senator Mark Warner from Virginia. And it's section 423. I'll have it linked in the show notes if you'd like to look at it. And it gives the U.S. president the power to block digital asset transactions. And they're calling it like a form of digital asset sanctions. And, you know, obviously they don't talk about it in the context of preventing transactions between law-abiding Americans. They talk about it in the context of preventing foreign terrorist activity. But if you read the language, while it does talk about foreign terrorist activity, it really says anybody who is under the jurisdiction of the United States, the president of the United States could block their digital transaction somehow. And it also is implying that everybody would be KYC'd. In order for the way this is structured to work, everyone would have to be KYC'd. Everything would have to be managed by the exchanges, which I'm sure they would love. I'm sure they would just love that. Now, we're not going to do the boost this week because I'm trying to keep this really short. Just get it in, get out. But please do keep sending them in. Maybe we'll have a banger in episode 15. Wouldn't that be fun? Remember, I asked you about how much Bitcoin collection by the ETFs is too much because there's approximately 1.5 million Bitcoin left to be mined ever for the rest of forever. They officially now, since last episode, they officially did cross the 5% total supply of Bitcoin locked up in the ETFs. So how much Bitcoin owned by the ETFs is too much? Is there too much? Maybe it's all good. I don't know. Boost in and let me know your thoughts, if you're uncomfortable with them owning a certain amount and why, or if you're not. All right, but moving right along, there's one more thing we need to talk about in this little episode. Right around the corner here, I got some quick thoughts on Wind Moon and some quick mining news that we're going to get to as well. Some interesting developments happening over there, but first I want to thank Podhome.fm, this episode's sponsor, and my podcasting 2.0 hosting platform of choice with unlimited shows and episode powered by unlimited Podhome AI. You know, Podhome's tools will balance out your audio, transcribe your podcast, automatically figure out your chapters, and even suggest episode titles and descriptions. That's pretty handy. But also just a lot of other nice 2.0 features in there. Easy to do music time splits like the magic wallet switching technology. Super crazy great for live streaming with audio streaming built right in. And the Podhome UI makes it easier than ever to look at your analytics and figure out how your show is doing. Podhome focuses on solving the things about publishing a podcast that I find tedious. I think you're going to love it. Use my promo code TWIB and take the first 3 months off for free. That's promo code TWIB. Go host your podcast somewhere where you actually have useful, innovative, and competitive features. These are the kinds of things that can put your podcast above the rest. Get above the noise flow, or the noise floor, I should say, and take advantage of all of those awesome tools built in. I love Podhome. You will too. Podhome.fm, promo code TWIB. Support the show and try it out for 3 months for absolutely free. Okay, let's do a little bit of a mining update because there is some things that have developed since we talked about Bitfarms last week. Seems they have adopted what's called the poison pill strategy to try to fend off that hostile takeover by Riot Platforms. This is never a good sign. And I guess we kind of expected these things after the halvening, but so Bitcoin miner Bitfarms announced on Monday that it had adopted this poison pill strategy to guard off this hostile takeover. And according to Bitfarms' statement, the plan will be activated if any entity acquires more than 15% equity stake by September 10th. The mechanism will result in the issuance of new stock to existing shareholders before that date, diluting the position of the potential acquirer. The goal is to make a hostile takeover prohibitively expensive for Riot Platforms, which currently holds a 12% stake in Bitfarms. So this new poison pill strategy initiates at 15%, and Riot currently owns 12%. This decision follows Riot Platforms' recent disclosure that it had acquired that 12% stake in Bitfarm, and also that Bitfarm had rejected a straight-up $950 million acquisition offer. They said no to that, so Riot said, okay, well, we'll buy out the hard way and start buying up the shares, and then, you know, maybe we'll advocate for a new board member or two. It's interesting. It's like they can't win at the hash rate war. I mean, Riot's doing fine, but like there's nothing there to do, so they have to do it at this business level. They have to do this attack at the business level. And so we're seeing Riot Platforms go after Bitfarm. And I don't have a lot of information other than what's just being reported by these two companies. If anybody out there has any kind of insights into the mining industry, please get a hold of me either through a boost or through the contact form on the site. I would love to pick your brain. This is an area of the show that I would like to expand with a direct correspondent. And I'd also love to talk to some of these mining operations to see how they're doing too, or some of these things. So it's an area that I don't have any direct access to right now, but I plan to just grow that for the show so I can get you some of the best coverage there. Because like we just don't talk about the mining industry enough. And that's something you guys wrote into me about, and I just completely agree. Okay, one last little story before we get out of here. It's supposed to be a shorty. I'm trying to keep it under 10 minutes, and I'm not going to make it, but I'll probably keep it under 15, so that's pretty good. Today, as I record, the Fed has made their decision. Surprise, surprise. They are not going to change the rates.
The Federal Reserve, in its June meeting, leaving interest rates unchanged and continues to say that it won't be appropriate to cut interest rates until it's gained confidence that it's headed towards its 2% target. The Fed, on average, now projecting one rate cut this year, down from three in the March forecast. Four officials, in fact, are projecting no cuts this year, up from only two in March. One official actually says no cuts this year or next year. No cuts for you.
No cuts for you. You know, I was looking at this and I looked back at some of the earlier predictions. It's funny, man. Like some of these guys that are now saying no rate cut or only one rate cut back in December, we're saying maybe the first rate cut would come as early as March and there'd be four of them. I'm kind of adjusting my expectations, though. I was thinking maybe July. Now I'm thinking September. I think I grabbed the six most important things you need to know about from today's Fed meeting, which was on 6/12/24. Inflation has what they call eased but remains too high by their own internal metrics. No kidding, Jerome. The Fed reasserts long-term inflation target of 2% at this meeting. Okay. Everybody keeps expecting them to maybe bump that up to 2.53. They're not. They say that they see a strong pace of immigration. That strong pace of immigration into the U.S. has bolstered the labor market and is suppressing wages. Jerome's words, not mine. Number four, the Fed says that the unemployment rate is remaining low, in part due to a high influx of immigration. Again, Jerome's words, not mine. Number five, the economic outlook is uncertain and the Fed is attentive to risk. Oh, well, if the Fed's attentive, I'm feeling so much better. I can sleep so much better now that the Fed's on it. And the last one, number six, the Fed needs greater confidence that inflation is headed to 2% before they will see any cuts. And they believe that the fight against inflation will likely last 4 years. In other words, your money is going to continue to get stolen from you for years. Protect yourself with Bitcoin, friends, because inflation is built into the fiat system. And they've even managed to somehow convince you that it's necessary. Well, not all of you. No. All right, that's it. Just a quick update from the woods. We'll have a full show back for you next week. And if anything major breaks in the meantime, I'll break into the feed with some coverage. Thank you so much for listening to this little itty-bitty version of This Week in Bitcoin. I'll leave you with a podcasting 2.0 ready value-for-value song. Consider sending this artist a little bit of sats. You know, the sats go directly to the artists and whoever else they've put in their splits. It's a great way to kind of support that community and participate in the podcasting 2.0 value-for-value ecosystem. And this week, we're wrapping it up with Give My Life by Minnow.